But as we're doing this, I actually put on the music Bob the Builder, which I've found is one of those tunes that, in fact, they just, have you seen this? They're reinventing Bob the Builder. I just saw it the other day. It's one of these horrible computer graphic generated things. He looks so artificial. I think it's a travesty that they should be allowed to do this. But I haven't seen it. I just saw the picture of him. And it, yeah, anyway, something I feel very passionate about. Bob the Builder should be preserved, as he always has been. Anyway, the music, the tune, Bob the Builder, is something that that I've just happened to have experimented with. And I've noticed as it goes on, I've noticed people's eyes light up. Younger children's eyes light up. They know it. Grandparents know it. And it's just, again, I just cite it as an example of a way in which playing that piece of music as a background to, albeit a 30-second activity, just present something that can connect people to what's going on in that service. A second example, it was during, I can't remember, I think it was a World Cup season, but anyway, it was football mania everywhere, and I was doing a series on doing a service based on the theme of trusting in God, and particularly when it gets tough, and we used the song You'll Never Walk Alone, and projected the words up on the screens, and we have a puppet team coming up throwing footballs in the air, waving flags and all the rest of it. But again, it was a sort of standalone part of the service, but it enabled us to use a song that's familiar to a wide range of people. Not a Christian song, but a song that actually presented those, you know, the theme, the image that we were trying to sort of work with in that act of worship, that we don't just walk alone, that God is with us through all situations. Second one I want to talk about is prayer. And there are a number of ways in which we can, again, in all-age worship, I've seen it done before where sometimes, you know, the prayers are just led by the children. And that's great. It's wonderful. But I would say in a truly all-age setting, yes, let's involve the children, but let's also involve older ones. And in fact, it can be quite powerful. I've noticed when actually you get three or four people, a child, a teenager, someone in their 20s, maybe somebody in their 50s or 60s, but just whatever it is, just a range of ages together leading in the prayers. And it can just be a very, very powerful thing. But let me give you three examples of the way in which symbol might be used to sort of engage with the imagination in prayer. First example was doing a service on time and the way in which we use time, how we steward the time that we're given. And asked everybody in the congregation to take their watches off and place them on their laps. Now, if you're going to do this, have some little cutout, cardboard cutout of watches for those who might not have them, including some of the younger children. But then everybody's got a watch, and they're asked during the prayer time to hold the watch, to think about every time they're going to be looking at that watch over the next few days, talk through the day, the following day, what it might be like on a Monday if it's in a Sunday service. Talk through getting people to imagine where they're going to be 9 o'clock the next day, where they're going to be at midday the next day, whether it's the workplace, whether it's at home, whether it's at school, whether it's on the playground, whether it's on the bus, whatever it may be. And encouraging people to imagine those things and to pray in to those things. So again, it's using the imagination in prayer. Second example was Palm Sunday. We often do the things with palm crosses and palm leaves and everything, but there's another part of the story which perhaps gets overlooked a bit too often, and that is that when Jesus rode into Jerusalem, they didn't only do the thing with the palm leaves, but it says that they also would lay their coats, their cloaks out on the ground as Jesus on the donkey rode across the cloaks. Now, actually, think about it, that's in some ways more meaningful and engaging than waving a palm leaf. Now, I'd imagine that palm leaves then and there were to a penny, but a cloak, a coat, could be one of the most precious things you would own. And to actually take that out and to lay it on a dusty track and to allow a donkey to actually walk across it. It was quite a thing. And I wanted the congregation to think a bit more about this. And so, depending on the sort of layout of the church, if you've got an aisle of some description that could work quite effectively, but I invited people to take the coats off and to lay them on the floor. And as we did this, we had a time of prayer and there was some music playing. People were invited to hold their coats and then to place them on the floor. And again, that's something that perhaps we don't do a lot. And so it was something just a little bit different to get the imagination going. As we thought about, you know, how do we make ourselves vulnerable? How do we lay things that are ours, that are important to us? How do we lay them down? And to encourage people to imagine what it would be like to actually lay your coat down, not just lay it down on the floor, but on a dusty floor, and to for a live animal. We didn't go as far as getting a donkey in, but you know, imagining people to getting people to imagine a donkey with Jesus on it actually riding across, walking across that coat. Again, as a way of encouraging people to pray, using their imagination to pray, that sense of laying things down before the King of Kings, making ourselves vulnerable to him. A third example, and this was a Christmas one, was we made paper chains. We gave everyone a little strip. You can still get them. There's little strips that tend to be self-adhesive rather than the licky ones that you used to have years ago. But you can get these things normally from pound shops and things like that. Give everyone a strip of a paper chain strip on their way in, a pen. And then we did this on Christmas Day last year. I asked people to sort of write their prayers on the strip. And then as some music was playing, some prayers were being led from the front, everyone was invited to join the pieces together and make a chain, and then it was joined together as a congregation, and as a way of actually saying that your prayers are actually joined together as part of something bigger, as part of the wider church, and indeed not just the local church, but the worldwide church, and offered to God. It was one of those things, if I'm honest, I approach Christmas often with a sense of about, you know, 500 services to have to get ready, and kind of thinking, okay, this is on the list of chores, I've got a plan, I've came across the idea, put it down and kind of got it ready and forgot about it. And then it got to the other side of Christmas, I remember, oh yeah, that service, yeah, I remember that one. Someone actually told me they were visiting church for the first time with their family that particular day, in fact, I think it was Christmas Day service. They don't normally come to church. They haven't been to church for years. They came along to it. And apparently that thing, that image of just their prayers being connected into something bigger had a huge impact. And they've started coming to church and coming back to faith again. And I was just blown away by that. And I found that a really personally challenging experience, that sometimes we just, perhaps the longer we've been Christians, the more familiar we become with these things, with these images. And we tend to become almost too familiar, and we become accustomed to it. And we take things for granted. And we take great truths for granted because we're so familiar with them. Yeah, the power of the imagination means that we can set it before people. And whether they've been Christians for a long time, or whether they're very new or just on the edge of things, wherever they're at in the journey, it provides a means in which we can connect with people using the imagination. So those are some examples of way in which we can use the imagination, use symbols in relation to prayer. The third aspect of worship is giving a message. Now, I've shared a couple of examples with you in the first session. The first one was a card trick. The second one was using the finger guillotine. And I think whatever means we're using, and as I said at the start, you don't have to be using gospel magic in order for that. There's so many resources out there, and in fact, in the back of my book, I give a list of resources, publications that exist that give loads of ideas on all age worship and websites and stuff like that. But the thing with however we're presenting it, and I'll give you a couple of examples in a moment. However we're presenting images in giving a message, I think it's really important that we actually leave them open-ended. And what I mean by that is that when we're giving a message, we don't explain the whole thing, but we actually leave it to people to work out for themselves. If you imagine somebody telling you a joke, and it's a really funny joke, and you collapse laughing, and you think, oh, that's great. And then they're still standing there, and then with a straight face, they go on and explain to you why it's funny. Kind of loses its edge a bit, doesn't it? And I think it's a similar thing when it comes to images and presenting them, that when we present them in worship, it's perhaps better to just leave it hanging and let people use their own imagination in order to work it out for themselves. I mean, notice when Jesus did this, when he taught in parables, that actually he set parables before the people he was teaching. And then most of the time, he didn't then go on to say what the parable meant. On those few occasions when he did, it was generally speaking because somebody came back to him and said, well, what does this mean? Most of the time, he didn't. Most of the time, when he presented the parables to people, because he knew that it would be the parables, the images that people would remember, and that afterwards they would go off and they would be talking about it and thinking about it, and then the penny would drop in a far more meaningful and personal way. And I think when it comes to using images and giving messages, the best way of doing it, if we can, if we do need to give some explanation, and sometimes we do the explanation first. So unpack the image, talk about the application stuff. This is what Jesus was saying. But then finish with the image, rather than giving the image first and then unpacking it. Do you see the difference? Now, the card trick that I started with is the exception to the rule. In fact, it's one of the very few examples of something that I use in my own ministry where I actually don't do that, and I start with the image and then I go on to explain it. But that's far more the exception to the rule. And where I can, what I try to do, and I don't know if you've noticed with the second example that I gave when I was using the thing with the finger chopper, carrot chopper, sorry, the things are still intact, it's still there, I hope. I don't know if you noticed, but before we actually got to the climax there, where we actually did the trick, is actually talked about peace there. At that point, when people were kind of thinking, what's going to happen? Is she going to come out this alive or not? And I think if we can do that when we're presenting images, whatever those images may be, it makes for a better opportunity for people to actually make their own connections with God using the images that they're being set before them, rather than whoever's leading it make those connections for them. So let me give you two examples of ways in which we might do this. Isn't an idea for Easter Sunday? This came from somebody who wrote an article a few years ago now in a church leadership CPAS publication. If you get an Easter egg, it is possible, it's a little bit tricky, but it is possible to dismantle it and put it back together again. So what you need is three Easter eggs. One of them you just leave intact, wrapped up with all the sweets inside. One of them you need to take the foil off, break the Easter egg into pieces, but then put it back together again. It's tricky, but it's just about possible. And then wrap the foil back around it and put it on display. And then the most difficult one is you actually open up the foil, take the chocolate egg out completely, and reshape the foil so that it looks like an egg, but there's actually nothing inside. And you put all three on display, and then use that to talk on Easter about the range of experiences that would have been going on in the lives of the disciples, and also to suggest images that may be people's experience right now. So the first one is opened and it's empty. There's no egg there. That was the empty tomb. That's also the way in which a lot of people are feeling, empty. Empty through all kinds of different reasons, spiritually empty. The second one is opened up and it's broken. And again, that was the disciples' experience. They'd invested their hopes and dreams in Jesus and saw him broken, and they too were broken. That's a lot of people's experience today in all kinds of different ways. people feel a sense of brokenness. And as this is all happening, of course, those that might not, perhaps those earlier stages of development who might not be able to think in abstract terms can nevertheless connect with an image and see and have some understanding of the sense of disappointment and the disbelief of opening up a piece of foil and finding there's nothing there. Or opening up and seeing that nice piece of chocolate they're expecting is actually all in bits. It's not how it's meant to be. And then the last image, of course, is opened up as an ordinary Easter egg, and it's opened up, and of course there's sweets inside, and talk about how actually Jesus came that we may have life, and life in all fullness, how he wants to fill us and keep on filling us. So that's one example. Second example of giving a message is talking about what Jesus said about being salt and light, and how Jesus said that we are to be the light of the world, for our light to shine in our daily witness, in our daily lives. And he said that nobody lights a lamp and hides it under a bowl, but they put it on a high place so that its light can shine. And do this and could light the light and the candle and talk about light and unpack the images, but leave with this question. Nobody puts a light under a bowl. What happens if you do? What happens if we retreat to those safe places rather than stepping out in faith and allowing God's Spirit to work through us? Nobody lights a light and puts it under a bowl. What happens if you do? And then go on and pray. Allow the image to do its own work, or rather, should I say, allow God to do his own work through the image. Set the image there and allow God to speak through it. Fourthly, enabling responses. Now, enabling a response in worship, I think, is actually as important, if not more important, than the message. Because in giving a message, whether we're talking about in a church service, whether it's in a young people's ministry setting, or whatever age group, whether it's in a school, an assembly, or whatever it may be, I'm looking for a response to be made. The message is great, but I don't want people just to hear a message and just say, oh, great message. I want them to connect. I want them to connect with God and to make their own response to God in a positive and meaningful way. And therefore, in planning something, the danger is sometimes we start, okay, we're going to start with a message, work out what it is we're going to say. Whereas perhaps is it not even more fundamental that we start by asking the question, not only what message are we trying to give here, but what kind of response are we looking for? Now, ultimately, it's going to differ depending on the individual, and it's going to be between that individual and God. But I think asking the question in planning and preparing material, and here I think it cuts right across, whether we're talking about leading worship, all-age worship, or any kind of worship for that matter, or whether we're talking about doing a session specifically with just children in children's ministry or teens or whatever it may be, whatever age group. You know, it's good for us to ask the question, well, how am I going to enable this person to make a response? And then, having started with that, to then think, well, okay, so what message then is going to be presented in order to bring them to that point? So it's the enabling a response is at least as important as the message itself. And images, coming back to all-age worship, images are really vital here. And I'm going to give you three examples of things that I've used. Got a candle here. I tend not to use candles too much, not because I've got anything against them, but it's just that candles sometimes can become a bit of a cliche if they're overused. And sometimes people's expectation of church is that it's all about lighting candles and, you know, nothing else is ever going to happen. So they can be overused. However, they can also be underused. And I find one of the really challenging Sundays is Mothering Sunday. And how to actually enable some kind of meaningful response, given that that day can be a really, really difficult day for a lot of people, whether it's been through bereavement, having lost their own mum recently through death, or maybe a long time ago. There would be people who without children, mums themselves may be bereaved, may have lost their children, maybe going through difficult times, broken relationships or whatever. Whilst on Mothering Sunday, I want to give the opportunity for people to give thanks, but I also want to give opportunity for people to express whatever it is that's going on in them at that point in time, for better or for worse. And so a colleague of mine suggested this, and I find it so useful, is just to give the response time, just to leave it wide open, and to actually be quite honest and say, look, realize today will be really difficult for a lot of you today. But God's bigger than that. God understands. God's love is far greater than for you, far greater than and more powerful than whatever is going on in your heart and mind right now. And therefore, what I'd like you to do is just come forward and to light a candle. And we'll have candles scattered across tables. And it's as simple as that. We play some music and allow people to come and light a candle in order to make their own response and to pray to bring in their imagination, whatever it is that's going on in their lives at that point in time. Second example of enabling a response was Easter time, looking at the story of the Emmaus Road, and wanted people to be able to connect in their imagination with the idea of going on a journey, walking along with Jesus, not realizing that Jesus is actually there all the time. And there's points in your life when it can be like that. You don't actually realize that Jesus is there, and he has been there all along. Got some rolls of wallpaper and stretched them out down the church aisle, and got people to draw around their feet on separate pieces of paper and cut them out, and then just to write a prayer of some sort on the cutout of their own footprint. And then we're invited to go and lay those on the piece of wallpaper. Again, just a way of encouraging people to express where they're at in their own walk with God, where they're at in their own journey, whatever that experience may be. And again, it's something that's left wide open and so can cut right across the whole faith development spectrum, depending on where people are at. The third example, was... we did this a couple of years ago at Christchurch in Clevedon, where we got we were doing a series between Easter and Pentecost, and we started off on Easter Sunday with a large wooden, very rugged looking cross, and wrapped round it was kind of that sort of wire mesh stuff that you use for sort of fencing off chicken coops and stuff like that. So that sort of wire mesh wrapped around the cross. And everybody at some point in the service, and we varied this week by week as to how exactly we did it, but we ensured that everybody was given the opportunity at church on Sunday to take a strip of paper away with them, a coloured strip. And on the coloured strip, it had a challenge, something to do in that week. It might be something like write a letter to somebody that you've lost touch with. It might be make a phone call to do the same. It might be make a donation to a charity. It might be pray for somebody. It might be go and visit somebody who you sense might be lonely. It was a challenge. Some of them were encouraging people to give something, to pray for something, or whatever. There were a whole range of different challenges. We had a separate basket for those that were particularly child-friendly. Pray for somebody else in the playground, something like that. We had a whole range of different challenges and different colours of piece of paper. And everybody was asked to take one of these away, to do it in the next week, and then the following Sunday to come back at some point in the service to come forward to the cross and just put the little strip that the challenge was printed on in the wire mesh on the cross. And we did this week by week by week between Easter and Pentecost. So by the time we got to Pentecost, this cross was just bursting with colour, with all these strips of paper all over it. Whilst that looked very nice, what was far more moving and most exciting of all was knowing that every week everyone was going away with these challenges, going off and doing them, and to think what was that doing out there within our community. And interestingly enough, the ones that we noticed embraced this with the greatest level of enthusiasm was actually the children. And they were really excited about it. They absolutely loved it. So again, it's a way of using the imagination of enabling everybody of all stages as well as all ages to make some kind of response. Now, I've got my eye on the clock there, and I think we're aiming to go for lunch at 5:30 or very soon after. So what I'm going to do is, rather than, because I've done a lot of talking and I was kind of planning to do an interactive bit, I think we won't do the activity that I was planning on doing, but we'll keep it more simple. What I'm going to ask you to do is just get into twos or threes and just talk over the stuff that I want you to think of one thing that you felt that you've has really made you think this morning, that has made you think about things differently, think about differently about worship or how we can enable people to connect with God. Just talk about that in twos or threes. One thing that you felt that you've perhaps been challenged by or that has been new, and then we'll come back together again and I'll take any questions if anyone's got any. So let's just do that now. Twos or threes, just for 2 minutes, and then we'll come back together.